Hello, we are broadcasting live, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we are on the road today, or rather one of our guests is, so we'll hear some background highway noise, as well as many bullets going out and blank shotgun shells from the Jade Helm exercises that are going on across the United States. My very special guests, nonetheless, are Paul Tepetti and Trevor Labonte. Why does everybody have like a strange pronunciation with the E on the end of their name, and people get it confused for sometimes? It's just a crazy thing. Anyway, guys, welcome to the program. And of course, the band that we're talking about today is Poker Face, and it's poker as in, you know, the game that you're playing, not poker as in something you do with the ribs when your wife is ordering something really, really expensive at the restaurant. Guys, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Manny. How's it going, brother?
Well, my standard response is that I'm somewhat fabulous.
Nice. It's been a while since we talked, man. It's good to hear you again.
It has been a while indeed, and since that time, I have changed, you know, who I am radically, as we all should, within the various months and years that go through our life. In fact, the person you are from year to year shouldn't be recognizable.
Nice. Hey, man, you're turning into a musician, man. I love it.
I love it, too, because there's something really enjoyable about being on the microphone and singing and entertaining people. You know, it just feels good. It's kind of like like you're generating good vibes that get sent around a circle and then come back to you through the audience sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Just a little bit, brother. I've only been doing it since I was like five, man. And I think Trevor about the same, right, buddy?
Yeah, that's right. Seven.
So it's nothing new for us, my friend.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering if that's the dynamic that you do, because I go into things when I'm very new and have no experience, but I make a lot of assumptions and presumptions based upon my observations that may get corroborated or discredited with years of experience.
Well, the best thing about it is try it, and, you know, if it feels good, continue it, man. And obviously, you're seeing the crowd reaction, so just go with it, man.
Same principle as marijuana, then. If you enjoy it, just keep doing it, and if it's got a good reaction, there's nothing wrong with it.
Amen, man.
The thing about truth-oriented music is that the public is, whether they know it or not, is starving for it right now, and... Because, you know, art is really not worth anything if you can't make it into a vehicle for truth. And that's why I think Poker Face is so great. And they've got, we're working on releasing their sixth album right now. And it's all, they're the only band I can think of that really, really goes against the grain and lays it all out there and explains who the enemy is. And they're just more than a breath of fresh air to me.
Well, and they sound. I'd hate to correct you, but there's... Here's the thing. The music industry is about business. You know, it's not about music anymore. We know this. It's been corrupted by the New World Order scumbaggery. Now, as a result, there are people who are making music all over the world in all different places that nobody's ever heard of, because they're not the kind of people who would sign their life away to a record label and do the soulless thing that some musicians do and let the lead singer divide the band, break up everything. Same thing that happened to Van Halen and a number of other really great acts who are truly independent before they get signed to big labels, and this whole spectacle starts coming out, and then the egos come in, not because they're
right.
Just there waiting to strike. It's because they get fed by the people who are financing your gigs.
You're right, they're out there, they're just not on the big labels, and all I know is that they came after me and attacked me viciously when I started exposing truth, and I wasn't even that famous, you know. I was in a band that...
Trevor, tell my story, man, how we met and what happened to you there in Austin.
Well, so I live in Austin, and I was well established here, gigging every single night, sometimes playing two or three gigs, and I started to do research into 9/11, and I quickly discovered that Israel's fingerprints are all over it, and then I started looking into this Holocaust issue. And I couldn't believe that there's no proof at all for it happening. It's just a bunch of like phony eyewitness testimonies from a show trial. And I started exposing this stuff just on Facebook, and a group of fanatical Zionists from my town went in on a hate campaign, and they terrorized everybody in my town that hired me. And I will say that I was one of the more established guitar players here in the jazz idiom, as well as in the pop and country idiom, and I played with all kinds of, you know, I'm a little different than Paul, whereas, you know, Paul has his band that it's always been his vision, and he's started, you know, he's been doing that, and for me, I've been doing this sideman thing where I could find myself in 10 or 15 different bands at once, and I was blacklisted, and these Orwellian terrorists went and all the people that I was playing with and all the places, all the venues where I was playing, they would call. And Paul reached out to me, actually, and he lent me a hand, and he came to Austin and brought me in on this truth convention, and I got to meet him and Michael Collins Piper, and I put together a little band and to back up Paul, and we learned 5 or 6 Poker Face songs and played them at Brave New Books, and Paul just gave me a lot of upward mobility in this thing that we call the truth movement. And I just got back from staying at his house a couple days ago and consider him a dear brother. And I know that the other musicians are still too terrified to try to talk to me or anything. And but I got Paul, and I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, well, there's this element in the music industry, which is this... I would like to call it competing rather than cooperating with musicians. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
there is that. But what happened with him was, when you start to wake up and you start talking truth, you're going to start talking about the Jew and his control of the music industry, control of our country, control of our money, control of the colleges. And what happens is all the little Satan and minions within each locality are there to try to shut you up and shut you down. And they were doing that to Trevor, and Trevor was hanging out there all by himself. He wasn't getting support from anybody. My girl saw that. She turned me on to Trevor's plight, and I went down there to speak for an American Free Press Truth and History Convention with Tex Mars. And while I was down there, I was like, look, brother, you need to know that you're not alone. There's a lot of great minds that think like you. You just need to be exposed to them and be brought into the family, because we're on the good side. We're on the right side. And all those demons that are trying to eat out your substance are just that. They're just demons. And they're there to try to bring you down, because they don't want people to be good examples of what the truth is. Trevor's a good man. He's a very humble man. He's a very gifted man. He doesn't brag. He doesn't have an ego like most musicians do. And he can play his ass off better than most musicians I've met in my life. And he's one of the most humble guys that you'll ever meet, dude. So it's been a blessing all around. And we're just continuing to find good acts. Like The Tank is another great band out there. Secret System is another phenomenal one. They kind of sound like Pink Floyd. So there are younger bands or bands that are doing it, but they're not going to get into the Jews media. They're not going to get the promotion. They're not going to get the backing, because if you're going to talk truth, they're going to censor you if you're going to sign.
Well, either that or the opportunities just don't come up to you in the first place. And also, right, even those people who aren't deliberately conspiring or whatever, they see you criticizing people like them in their jobs, and they go, well, I'm not going to get this guy a record label. I don't care how good he sounds. He's insulting me, you know, thinking that insulting the controllers behind the establishments means that you're insulting them, because they believe that they're still a part of it. And right, one of the other elements that I found was particularly interesting is the element of choice. You have a choice about these two different paths to success, right? And I think it's like most people don't actually get to success because they don't really want to fully commit to either one or the other in some cases. Is number one, if you go out from the mainstream and you know for a fact you're going to suddenly lose all your mainstream audience. You know, it sounds perfectly reasonable. It's a good assumption, because that's precisely what's has a track record of showing to happen. This is true across almost all spectrums of entertainment, regardless of whether you're a filmmaker, music maker, or candlestick maker. If you speak out against the New World Order, no more encouragement for you. So the one thing that's very, very different now, and this is the other route that we're talking about, is you have a look at, say, for example, steampunk bands and another of very underground movements, death metal, etc., very isolated, non-mainstream music genres. The only way that those bands actually have enough money to survive and have enough of a following is because they didn't go for big fame all of a sudden. They worked their way up and they got a solid fan base, so that at any point when they do become mainstream and then say something they don't like and lose their mainstream audience, the band doesn't get get completely destroyed because they've got that fan base, they've got that support, they've got that minimum income that they've need to support themselves in order to continue their craft. And I think that a lot of truther musicians really need to start banking on that route, because people are waking up like never before about the control system and everything that is conspiring to corrupt the truth movement itself and all of our expressions in art. And I think that it's the other people in this world who realize that, who don't have a lot of money, who do crowdsourcing, come to gigs, things of that nature, and a collective kind of financing and a good, decent little fan base builder should be right up the alley of a lot of good people.
Well, most of the death metal bands are too busy bashing Christ to bother trying to expose 9/11 truth and the simple truth is that Israel did it. Poker Face has an album that when you open up the jacket, it's a big fold out that gives you all of this information, all the information you need to research to understand how Israel did 9/11. And I still have never heard of any punk bands or death metal bands that talk about that. And in my case, I was a little naive when I started out trying to publicize the truth. I didn't know that people were going to be so terrified of the information that I was bringing out. I mean, they're completely petrified and won't even list off Israel as a suspect in 9/11, even though they were caught with driving vans loaded with tons of explosives and caught recording the attacks on a camera on a tripod before the first plane hit. They were dancing and celebrating when the rest of the country was in shock and thought that it was a terrible accident. So, you know, freedom of speech extends to a certain amount, but it doesn't cover you anymore when you start talking about the real perpetrators of 9/11 or the real story of the Second World War.
It doesn't really matter to people what the real truth is. What matters is, have I got food on my table? Have I got a roof over my head? Unfortunately, though, the food on their table and the roofs over their heads are being taken away piece by piece very, very slowly, so they don't even notice that soon enough the table's going to be empty and there won't be no roof, and they're going to be out on the street.
Right, they don't care about their fellow man because they're too busy being selfish. That's the New World Order paradigm. You only care about yourself and you don't...
I don't know, bro. Like that might be true from afar when you look at somebody who's like, 10,000 miles away, 100 people die or something. Most people don't care, right? Not part of your life. But almost everybody, if they see somebody who's hurt in front of them and then the assailant runs away, a lot of people will suddenly stop exactly whatever they're doing to come and help you. And that happened right after 9/11, didn't it? The whole country just kind of came together. And that
the whole bunch came together to go after all the wrong people because they're being brainwashed by the Jewish controlled media and they believe that Muslims
again
9/11.
Again, that's from a distance, and that's what the controllers do. But when it's person to person, when it's right there, people were hugging each other in the streets, crying on total strangers' shoulders. You know, like that's what we really react like when we're given the direct choice, when we're not told to behave a certain way. We care about each other. But when we're looking at it on and on TV and we're having it read to us by the news, we become really hateful. We basically really don't see our adversaries as human anymore.
You're right. And I do believe in the goodness of human nature, or I wouldn't be doing this. However, there are certain people that wake up faster than the other ones, and that's who I try to wake up first are the ones that are ready for the truth. And then, you know, but isn't it interesting, Vinny, that when people thought Muslims did 9/11, everyone was out in the streets shooting their guns and at the sky and wanting to attack at any country that where this Al-Qaeda entity was supposed to be hiding. But then the second that you realize that it might be the neocons and Jews and Israelis, then all of a sudden the room goes deathly quiet. And I can attest to this, man, because I had 1,500 friends in Austin that I played with all the time that really respected me as a musician, and they're in an utter panic right now over the things that I have been saying. And this panic would not be occurring if it was Cherokee Indians or Eskimos or, you know, Aborigines that did 9/11, but it wasn't. It was the Jews, and so all of a sudden, everyone's tail goes between their legs, and they can't even say the J word. That's how what kind of Orwellian terror scheme that we live under in a daily basis.
Well, see, me personally, I don't use the Jew word because, first of all, people don't understand what a Jew is. It's like a Catholic. It's a religion, and there's like all these different tribes and everything. Secondly, categorizing an entire what people think of as race into exactly one category and say that this one category of everybody, you know, like the projection comes on and people think, oh, he means every single person when they're Jewish. As soon as they get their foreskin cut off, they become inducted into this conspiracy of how to enslave the goy. That's so crazy, you know, like people don't understand what is meant by it, because when you're using words that are loaded terms, right, you need to generally define exactly what you mean, exactly what you don't mean, and exactly what the misconceptions could possibly be to head them all off so that nobody can misinterpret what you say.
Well, let me define what I mean then, because Jews are not a race. They're an ideological collective. So when they leave this supremacist ideological collective, they announce that they are no longer Jews. See, being Jewish is a choice. It's not like a race, like black, where you can't change your race, but you can change your belief system. And the one thing, you know, you realize that like 80% of Jews are not even religious, right? So the one thing that ties them all together is they have to believe in their own chosenness, their own supremacism. Basically, they're an ideological collective of moral relativists, and they believe that the Gentiles are animals that are here to serve them. And I also noticed they have a real problem telling the truth about 9/11, the Holocaust, or the JFK assassination, or the supremacist nature of their religion. They lie about it constantly. You know, ask any Jew, and they'll start wringing their hands and get really nervous if you ask them that if they believe that the Goyim are their slaves, you know, and then in their own writings, they talk all about, their directive to, rule the world. And, you know, if people would just look at their own words and see that this is them, they're the ones that call themselves Jews. I didn't make up that word. And what does it mean to be a Jew? Well, it means to side with the other Jews against the Gentiles. There's a war. It's Gentiles versus Jews, and the Jews are the enemy. Period.
And you're talking about a very
nicely.
Yeah.
If you want to sit and haggle over the 2 or 3% of them that supposedly are against Zionism or whatever, it's just a waste of time, because in the end they're all on the same team, because that's what it means to be Jewish.
Okay. Now let's define precisely what you don't mean. That's what you do mean. What do you not mean?
What do I not mean by Jews? Okay, well, I'm not attacking them on any kind of ethnic or religious or racial grounds. I don't even have to talk about Jews. What I talk about, what I focus on, if you want to avoid all that bullcrap that they try to put you through, is you focus on the ideology of Jewish supremacism. Now, if you can find one single example of any Jewish secular or religious intellectual that explains why Gentiles are humans and why they should be treated as equals, then I'm all ears. But I happen to know that it doesn't exist. All for thousands of years, all we've gotten from them is this continuous supremacist hate screed about how the Goyim are animals and how we, you know, worship Jesus, who is the son of a whore, who is burning in hell and being boiled in excrement.
And we're there to serve them.
And all this evil shit and that they say. But yeah, so it's got absolutely nothing to do for me with their race or their ethnicity or anything. They are an ideological collective, and if they want to leave it, they should do like my friend Gilad Atzman or brother Nathaniel or Benjamin Friedman and renounce their supremacist Jewish identity and join the human race for real.
I also kind of think about the with us or against us, and you mentioned the 3% who are against Jewish supremacy. When I think there was something like a 4 or 8 million man protest held in Israel against Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, and it added up to nearly 50% of the entire population of the country were literally in the streets. So seems to me like every religious ideology has the same objective, to take over the world and convert everybody to their point of view, because they've got the one truth. So if you have a look at if you want to have a look at, for example, the learned elders of Zion, it's exactly the same kind of real nasty world dominating, everybody's dehumanized compared to our sort of ideology.
That's Jewish ideology, the protocols of the elders of Zion, right?
Exactly.
I'll point out, these people that are out in the streets that are protesting in Israel are not necessarily good people. A lot of them protest Israel's policies because they find them inhumane. They're against the quote-unquote apartheid. But what people need to remember is that they shouldn't be in that land in the first place. There is no justification for to build a racist Jewish state on top of Palestine. And the notion that Palestinians and Israelis can exist in peace with one another ignores the fundamental problem, which is that murderers and victims cannot live in peace together. It's absurd, the notion that there should be this Jewish state, and that its only problem is this that it occupies the West Bank, and so basically what they want is the ones that want to end the occupation of the West Bank just view that as the final step in the process of legitimizing the theft of Palestine. It's something that I don't take kindly to whatsoever, and it doesn't make them heroes to me at all. If they want to be heroes, like I said, they can pronounce
Paul, Paul, do you have something to say then?
Yeah, I was just going to basically back up everything that Trevor's been saying about, you know, the Jews are not a religion, it's an ideology of sociopsychopathy on how to treat others inhumanely in the racialist supremacist views. And they do practice moral relativism. If it feels good, you fuck it. It doesn't matter if they have to kill you to get what's yours, if they have to lie about you to get what's yours, or threaten that this is the last generation of white babies to be born, whether it's rabbinical or secular leaders saying this. Okay,
so basically they have the exact same ideology as the U.S. government.
Well, they're the source of the ideology of the U.S. government.
Yeah, Paul, can you mute, please? It's really disruptive, and you're breaking up when you're talking. Can you mute there, Paul, please?
Yeah, all British and American and white European exceptionalism actually is Jewish at its root, and all of these movements were created by the Jews because they know that any time they can get anyone to drink their supremacist Kool-Aid, that person can become a tool for them. So they tell you that America is an exceptional country, and that we're necessary. It's necessary for us to go around the world and kill millions of people in the name of peace. And of course, the cornerstones of the monuments and capitals in this country were laid by Freemasons, and Freemasonry is a secret society of Jewish supremacists that believe in a new world order. At least at the top degrees know this, and the lower degrees don't know what they're doing. They're just stupid Gentiles that are tools for the Jews without even knowing it. But you know that this is the basic philosophical difference between Christianity and Islam versus Judaism. It all comes down to a philosophical battle.
I was interviewing Dr. Kevin Barrett about this, the difference between Muslims, Christians, and Jews, and the difference is usury. Christians don't like it, Muslims don't like it, Jews don't like it, but if you're a Gentile, they don't have a problem with usury. They don't have a problem with charging you interest, but they don't loan money to other Jews with interest, or at least that's the cornerstone of the religious belief.
Exactly, and usury is their mechanism for controlling the world, but there is still a deeper underlying philosophical difference, which is that Jews do not believe in the golden rule. They don't believe in treating others the way they were treated, the way they want to be treated. They believe in treating other Jews the way that they want to be treated, but it really comes down to the golden rule. If you think that if you think other people should be treated the way that you want to be treated, then you are with the Christians and you're with the Muslims and you are by default against Judaism and Jewish supremacism. You won't find anywhere any Jew saying that Gentiles are equal value to the Jews. This is why Jesus called them a brood of vipers. He was very explicit. He explained that these people were of their father, the devil. They behave like demons because they don't have any common decency, because they don't believe in a golden rule for all of mankind. They're not part of a universal moral system for humanity. They're out for themselves. And all of their writings, if you just study what they write, will back up what I'm saying.
Now, also, what I wanted to talk about was the Holocaust, or the Holo hoax, as it's somehow known. And it's quite interesting. The Red Cross did report that there were a significant amount of, you know, what they called ethnic Jews at the time, which was a popularist thing done by Adolf Hitler to say that Jews were a race, and you know, you could tell who was who by the width of their nose and all of that kind of thing. And incidentally, the so-called Jews that they rounded up didn't happen to be the extremely wealthy elite Jews. Isn't that interesting? And it turns out that they were getting financed by them. And so all the little people of their own ilk who kind of don't prey on others kind of got a little bit exterminated. But according to the Red Cross, there was like 250,000.
Yeah, 271,301 is the total number of deaths in all of Germany's camps. And the camps were just labor camps. The deaths in them were due to actually Allied bombing. It's pretty ironic, Vinny, that they're saying that the Germans were using Zyklon B to exterminate the Jews, when Zyklon B is a commercially produced disinfectant with one purpose, which is to kill lice, which were spreading typhus. So you see these pictures of thousands of people. They're from the camp Bergen-Belsen, where they all ended up concentrated in the last few weeks of the war. But because the Allies bombed all of the supply line and there was no food or water or medicine for anybody, those are the victims of Allied atrocities that were blamed on Germany in the Nuremberg trials, which is nothing but a show trial that was, even if you read Articles 19 and 20 of the Nuremberg Charter, it says that the trial will not be bound to the technical rules of evidence. So they're throwing the rules of evidence out the window, and any person that actually reads the transcript of the trial will see that it's like a Superman comic book or something. That's how ridiculous it is, the things that they're blaming on the Germans, the things that this trial supposedly proves, like that the Germans vaporized 20,000 Jews with atomic energy that they didn't even have, that they were steaming Jews like lobsters in steam chambers that were never found, that they were electrocuting Jews on giant electrocution platforms. They were making soap and lampshades and book bindings and riding breeches and driving gloves. And it's completely ridiculous. Even Steven Spielberg on his worst day couldn't come up with something that's just so utterly ridiculous and full of lies. And I'm also going to quickly assert my opinion here. I respect your opinion about Hitler supposedly being financed by the Jews. I believed that for about a week, and then I started to research it, and I found that
actually it was financed by the Americans.
Well, that's what they try to say, that it was the Rockefellers and Bushes and Harrimans. But I'll just make this real quick, brother, because this can turn into quite a discussion. But the bottom line for corporations is it's all profit driven. So it had nothing to do with supporting Hitler. It had everything to do with just having normal trade relations for two countries that are not at war with one another. And the idea that Wall Street would finance Hitler into power is ridiculous, because Hitler made usury punishable by death. And every Jew on the planet was terrified of him for that. And they would have never financed him. But there is a large disinformation campaign aimed at people that are awake to the atrocities of Israel. And then they want to find out what exactly Hitler's deal was. Was he on the side of these Zionists or not? And some people say that he was. I say, hell no, he wasn't. He was expelling Jews. There's this transfer agreement that they had, which is woven into this big conspiracy theory. Oh, the Bushes and Harrimans and all these people. And, well,
but Prescott and Bush was. Yeah, but Prescott Bush was charged under the Trading with the Enemy Act, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was after the fact, but I mean,
so he got charged after he committed the crime. Therefore, the crime didn't happen. You know, so no,
it's just a common sense thing that these people would have never supported Hitler, and the only let's take for example the book that people almost always cite when they want to get into these conspiracy theories about Hitler. Is Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler by Anthony C. Sutton, which is published by the Hoover Institute. And Sutton, if you actually read the book, he doesn't make his case in it, and he just lays out this weak. I mean, it really comes down to this. Business was just business. These corporations were trying to make a profit. They were definitely not fans of Hitler.
Well, can I give an example to back that up? Coca-Cola, realizing that it was illegal to trade and sell Coca-Cola with the Germans under the Trading with the Enemy Act, they created a company in Germany called Fanta that produced an orange soda so they could still make money. Not to mention, there's also a whole lot of footage of Coca-Cola getting taken in by the Germans anyway, and even in the desert campaigns in northern Africa, the German pilots would wet a towel, wrap it around a bottle of Coke, stick it in their plane's wing, and then fly around for a little bit, come back down, and ice would have formed, and they can have an ice-cold Coke in the middle of the desert. I've seen the footage. Quite interesting, isn't it? Business yeah. knows no bounds, and this is the interesting part about it, is because it doesn't matter who I found or what their beliefs are, because business seems to override everything. Oh, are you killing a whole bunch of people? Yeah. Well, at least as we'll get our profits. Are you taking away a whole bunch of people's civil liberties and rights to speak out against the government and asking people for their papers everywhere they work and really kind of just making a big socialist nightmare out of it? Yeah. Well, as long as we make a profit, it's all good.
But the Germans loved Hitler. He had a 95% approval rating, and it's not due to coercion.
So did Chairman Mao, and Chairman Mao exterminated like 80 million minimum.
Chairman Mao was given $20 million by the Rothschilds to spread Jewish communism throughout China, though, and whereas Hitler was a populist leader who was elected by his people. And I just, you know, all of the evidence points to him just being an honest German, and the German NSDAP Germany was not a repressive place. I mean, if you look at any picture from taken within it, every person in the picture is smiling from ear to ear. They love their leader, and he
so
led
you reckon
them
out. It's a big media
nightmare. He was not a dictator at all. He only assumed this. He created this enabling act just so he could nix the Weimar Constitution, and he was a hero to his people. And the reason that he was, they were never persecuting Jews. The problem was that, you know, 85%.
What about Kristallnacht?
Of the 85% of the communist commissars were Jews, and they killed 66 million Russians. Those were the problem. And Hitler was trying to safeguard Europe from them. And Germany was not a repressive place. All they wanted to do was expel the Jews because they were totally involved in communism, and they had overtaken entire German cities, including Berlin, communist red partisans in the streets, killing people, dragging people out of their houses. It was a total fucking nightmare, and they had turned Berlin into this complete cesspit of depravity where there was 100,000 prostitutes on the street every night. Mother-daughter combos, you name it, man. And Germany needed to be saved. Hitler was the man they elected. He wasn't any kind of Rothschild agent, and he had nothing to do with the British royalty or any of that stuff. These are all what I discovered, you know, when I started researching him, is that there is about 10 times more lies about Hitler than there are about any other person in the world. But anyway, I don't want to conflict with you. I just wanted to assert the findings of my research on Hitler, which was that he was a populist, and he lived his life to serve his people, and he doesn't deserve any of these conspiracy theories that the Rothschilds were backing him. And I looked into that conspiracy theory. Did the Rothschilds back Hitler? No, they actually tried to back his opposition within the party. And then another person that's quoted or that's alluded to a lot that supposedly financed Hitler is this guy named Sidney Warburg. Now, if you look up Sidney Warburg, what you'll find out is the man didn't fucking exist. There is no person named Sidney Warburg. So people make up these lies because they don't want people to know that Adolf Hitler wrote the blueprint to smash the New World Order into a million pieces. And the secret behind it is the labor treasury note. He created a system of currency that's backed only by labor. He was influenced by the economist Gottfried Feder, who showed how stock market speculation and these other things are like parasitical activities, and that labor is the source of all value. So that when Hitler was elected, there was about 50% unemployment in Germany, and it went down to under 2% within a couple years because of this system that Hitler created. And here they built the Autobahn. People were driving Volkswagens for 5 Deutschmarks per week, when just a couple years before that, it was 4 or 10 billion Deutschmarks just to buy a loaf of bread under the Weimar regime. So they went from that to success and to being one of the most powerful country in Europe under Hitler. And this is why the international Jews had to snuff out Hitler. He was never their boy. They had to snuff out his revolution before it went global, because the rest of the world was stuck in economic depression and manufactured famines by the globalist Jewish bankers. And here Hitler's country was exploding with prosperity during the exact same time. So you can see that was quite an embarrassment for the international Jews.
And that's all because he created the labor-backed currency and had nothing to do with the alleged trillions of dollars that were given by American businesses who set up shop in Germany and revitalized the economy after the Great Depression had destroyed it?
It was Hitler that revitalized the economy. It was the German people that did that. You can't give credit to the American corporations for doing that.
So no financing of any kind from America went to Germany during the stage of its restructuring, rebirth, and subsequent being led by Hitler?
Not according to my research, brother.
Okay, all right. I'll take that one down, not to contradict you. And on top of that, there's the other elements that we've got here is the Reichstag fire. Did it happen or did it not?
There was a fire, but the Germans had already prosecuted a mentally unstable Jew. I forget his name at the moment, but the source of the story about Hitler burning down his own Reichstag is not true. It comes from the Nuremberg trials, of course, which is where the Holocaust story itself comes from. So no, I do not believe that Hitler would burn down his own Reichstag, nor do I believe that he committed a false flag in Gliwice, Poland. These are just stories that the victors of the Second World War made up later to try to make Hitler look like a dictator. And we know who specializes in false flag attacks. It's the Jews.
So Hitler wasn't a dictator. Did he have free elections where other people and other parties were free to run against him?
He was so popular.
After he became chancellor?
Look, Putin right now is at about 89% approval rating. Hitler was at 95%. These people were unbelievably popular. And one thing that really helps drive it home is for people to understand that the people that were in Danzig and in Sudetenland and Austria and the Tsarland, which were the regions of Germany which were amputated off by the Jewish bankers in the Treaty of Versailles, these people all voted 99%+ in internationally supervised referenda to join the Reich. So if Hitler was such a dictator, then how did he get all of these people in other countries that were not under his jurisdiction to vote to join him? 99%+ to rejoin the German Reich, which they're a part of 15 years before that.
So are you suggesting it's impossible to get the majority of people to support a dictator?
In other countries? Think about that. Someone that's in another country is going to support you 99.5%. you know, 5%. It debunks all of the theories.
I don't know. There's in New Zealand, for example, you have like 90% of people who support Barack Obama, who has technically dictatorial powers as well. As far as I know, being a dictator comes down to one thing. Can you convince people that they're free and still be a dictator? And you can, easily. Especially if you've got a Ministry of Propaganda and Public Enlightenment headed by Joseph Goebbels, who's probably one of the most talented marketing people of the time.
Well, I challenge anyone to go through any of Joseph Goebbels' writings or speeches and find anything that he's saying is not true. It's either, propaganda doesn't have to be lies, and German propaganda was based on truth, which I was surprised because my whole life I was taught that it was that they were these brilliant propagandists, that they made everyone believe in these big lies. But then I started to read what they're actually saying, and they're talking about the Rothschilds, they're talking about the Freemasons, they're talking about the New World Order, Judaism, all these things. And it was a truth movement, and it was probably the best truth movement the world has ever seen still to this day. They had not only the Germans awake, but most of Europe. And, you know, like one thing that you're not supposed to talk about is the Waffen-SS, the fact that they were not that they started in Germany but grew into a continental force of 1 million-plus volunteers.
A communist.
You know?
Well, let's not forget that Erich von Manstein was Hitler's master strategist, and Hitler's bodyguard, Emil Morris as well, Rudolf Hess, which was Hitler's deputy, Eckhard Milch, his chief of the Air Force, Theodor Moral, which was Hitler's personal physician, as well as thousands of German officers and soldiers, right? And this came out not too long ago in the University of Kansas Press called Hitler's Jewish Soldiers. So for somebody who's so, you know, anti-Jewish, he seemed to have an awful lot of people of their ilk working for him.
Brother, they're trying to muddy the issue because these people obviously, when you actually read those books, what it says is that these are people that had Jewish ancestors. And like I said,
It's an ideology, not a race.
So what the deal was that Hitler was willing to let these people... he was willing to trust these people that they could be nationalistic Germans primarily and let their Jewish identity fall somewhere behind that. So if you can be primarily a German nationalist, then there is no problem with you.
Yeah. Well, just based upon that little list of people, you can tell that Jews are not a race. It's an ideology. Otherwise, Hitler would have never employed them if he was actually anti-Jewish in the first freaking place, which he probably clearly isn't. Because the whole propaganda about it is that Hitler hated Jews because they were a race, and this kind of debunks that, doesn't it?
Well, he believed that they were a race. People believed that at that time because there wasn't the DNA science that we have now. But they're more of like a phenotype, I guess. I mean, they do look different than other people in a lot of cases, but it wasn't about hating people based on their ethnicity. That's a lie. But he was anti-Jewish to the bone. I mean, and what that means is that he opposed their ideology. And if they wanted to say, "Hey, Hitler, I don't want to be a Jew anymore. I want to join the Universal Brotherhood of Mankind," and then Hitler would have welcomed them with open arms to become Germans.
So there was no eugenics. There was no eugenics, no incentives for like the master race or favoritism for blue-eyed blonde hair. Is that all propaganda?
No. The term master race, first of all, what people have to realize is that this is translated from German. The actual term is Herrenvolk, which means like it's
the common folk.
It's a marriage between the lower classes and like the working class. You know, Volk are like I forget what the real term
people.
Is. I don't really call them low class people, but there's like the working class, and there's what's below that. So
the Untermenschen, unworthy life, is the translation. Apparently, there were what was it like? Gays, gypsies, blacks, people who were mentally handicapped, physically handicapped, or something like that.
Yeah, he had some racist views when he was younger, when he was writing. Mein Kampf, but he advanced beyond that later on and didn't believe as much in that. But you brought up something really interesting, which is the eugenics program. First of all, the term eugenics means that which is good for life. Like, for example, you know, distress is when you have negative stress, but eustress is like when you exercise. So eugenics actually means what is good for the population. And what the German eugenics program consisted of is things like this. If a man and woman wanted to marry in the Third Reich, the government would pay off one quarter of their mortgage for every child they had. So if they had four children, the government paid for their house completely. And that's just one example. I could go through a whole list, but the eugenics program was to make the population grow. And what we have today in America and elsewhere is more accurately described as a dysgenics program, where they do everything in their power to make sure that nobody procreates. And, you know, I went through it in high school and college and grade school. My whole education, it was all about, you know, overpopulation, which is a myth, and, you know.
Zero-sum.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I don't mean to dominate the show. I really want to let
this is actually good, because everybody, the subjects make people uncomfortable. And as far as I'm concerned, the only topics that are the most important really are the ones that people are make people so uncomfortable, because they haven't actually allowed themselves to just sit back and listen to it and absorb it before. So, you know, please continue. What harm could it possibly do?
Well, in America, what we have is, you know, fluoride and chemtrails and GMOs, and it's just this constant. And then there's all the propaganda about, you know, don't have babies, you're evil if you have babies because the world's overpopulated. How could you bring children into this world? And we're just, it comes at us from every angle, and that's a dysgenics program. And it's in a stark contrast to what was going on in Germany. And this is a good measure of whether your country has a dictator or not, because if the leader is actually doing things that are good for the population and helping them. I mean, how would you like to have someone pay off your mortgage if you had four children? I mean,
Well, you know what it strikes me as? You know, when Gaddafi was running Libya and he made these huge, awesome social programs, he was able to get people growing food in the desert, he was paying off most people's cars for them, he was giving them all the free medical care, paying for their apartments, giving them big wedding gifts and the whole nine yards. He could drive through the streets just standing up in a Pajero, no security, no nothing, just and everybody in the streets just clapping for him and everything as he goes past, not even afraid, right? And then suddenly he's an evil person who needs to be enslaved and dominated, and we need to set up a private banking corporation as well, because he's got a government one, and that's just not good. And we also need to set up a private oil company as well, and we also need to scrap that using gold instead of made up US dollar notes that are backed by a banking cartel stuff as well. I mean, because that's just not freedom, buddy. You know, bombing the people and taking control of their resources and assets is.
Yeah, dictator is just a buzzword that the international Jewish bankers use before they eliminate somebody, and that's exactly what they did to Gaddafi, and they did the same thing to Hitler.
And to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein offered a $100 million care package kind of thing to the United States in 2001, before 9/11, to help the Americans living in poverty.
Hussein started off as a CIA asset. He was installed by them, but then as time went by, he bit his masters in the ass, and they took him out. That's what happens the second that one of their puppets steps out of line, they get whacked. But you brought up an interesting point about Gaddafi being able to stand up in his car and not worry about getting shot, because you know who else could do that, and who was Hitler. Look at any video of him. He's standing up in his car. Anybody could have picked him off, but nobody wanted to, because he saved Germany in for 6 to 12 years from the Jews, and he was a hero, and no one would have ever dreamed of killing them, and they elected him. I mean, he fought in 48 battles in World War I. He never wanted to see another war. His job that he was elected to do was to kick out the Bolsheviks and reunite Germany, and he was a servant of his people. He didn't care about money. He wasn't in it for the money. He didn't even carry a wallet or anything like that. He was a person who lived to serve his people and to help them survive the Bolshevik nightmare hellhole that they were swirling around in.
Oh, Pete, you're You're still breaking up there, buddy. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to explain why this is happening. These guys were doing some recording in a studio earlier, and Pete has to drive through a very hilly area, so hence his bad connection. So it's very unfortunate for those who called in to hear Mr. Pete Tapetti from Poker Face talk about all of this stuff with us. It's very unfortunate. I kind of feel deprived. I feel slighted. You know, but it's been quite good to be able to hash it out, and it's cool when people can argue and have a discussion and make different points and claims and be able to hear each other out without it descending into this crazy name calling abusive shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm sure Paul.
That's what freedom is about. It's about getting people together that might only agree on 80%, but we keep them talking.
Yeah.
And then we find out that we have a lot in common.
Yeah, well, I've always said for a long time that it's the points we agree we should come together and collaborate. The points that we disagree are usually quite kind of minor ideological things, and we could possibly leave them for a later discussion at some point. Maybe at a point where we're no longer under the rule of ruthless criminal sociopathic banking scumbags who have no conscience, no soul, and want to kill and enslave everybody. I mean, you know, just a thought.
Hear, hear.
Dude, I love your scumbaggery, man. It's great, especially with the accent. It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with exposing scumbaggery. All right.
Are you serious that Barack Obama has a 90% approval rating in New Zealand, though? I find that hard to believe, you know.
Oh, dude, I was driving around. There were like Obama 08 bumper stickers on cars driving around in New Zealand.
Wow. Well, I mean, at the time, he was really popular. But I will give him credit for one thing and one thing only, which is dragging his feet on this war that the Israelis want with Iran. I know that he's got an ulterior motive. He was placed in power by the Jewish left, who wants someone that's less conspicuously maniacal than the Likud party and Benjamin Netanyahu. They want to go for a slow kill. They want to poison their enemy versus blowing them up with bombs. However, when people bring up Obama, I have to point out that he is dragging his feet on their war, and we're not involved in an overt war with Iran or Syria, although we are completely, you know, funding all these covert mercenaries and stuff. But, you know, he's not a servant of the Jewish right. He's a servant of the Jewish left, and they should be thought of as these two factions of Jewish power are actually splitting right down the middle because, you know, the Jewish left is sick of the right and their religious-themed warmongering. They know that it's never going to fly.
Mm. And, Trevor, I'm sorry, but we're coming to the end of the show, and unfortunately we've run out of time. So do you have a website or something real quick before we go?
Just find me on Facebook and Trevor Labonte on Facebook, and I also am a co-editor for The Ugly Truth, Mark Glenn's website, and another website called Mukawama Music, and I do lots of stuff. Just Google my name.
Oh, right. That's all we got time up for, as well as search up Paul Tapetti and Poker Face. We'll be right back, folks.
I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio is back. We're trying to become commercial free, apart from a few honourable advertisers that we would give ad space to even if they couldn't pay us. In this quest to deliver quality radio with very few annoying ads, we are now asking the listeners like you to open up and become partners with American Freedom Radio. We all know the economy is controlled, and a new system called the peer-to-peer economy is now within our grasp. That means if you'd like this network with its incredible hosts and credible information to be nothing but the content you want to hear, then you must realize that you cannot be a part of it if you're just sitting on the sidelines watching. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and pledge your support today. Donate according to your means. Some can only afford $1 a month, while others can afford $100 a month. Regardless of the size of your contribution, it all adds up to keeping the network owners and the radio hosts housed and fed at the end of every month. Thank you.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape, various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No paste, no filler. Our solution is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkey Light removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkey Light is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkey Light LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey water banner.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on AmericanFreedomRadio.com live. This hour I'll be doing it solo ono. And so if you want to call in and chat with the Vinmeister, Vin Cheezel, the Vinnie man, Mr. News, Vinnie Eastwood, the number is 218-339-8525. Just call in, have a chat. If you're in the US, that's a lot easier than being from New Zealand and calling that number because it's quite expensive, especially if you're on some of the old telecommunications rates that are still memorized from my days of being a telemarketer who basically made a massive dent in the in the pockets of incredibly greedy telecom companies by showing people a better way. Or at least that's what I thought I was doing at the time, until they fired me for doing the right thing. Anyway, that's the story of everybody, isn't it? Now, I'm going to be on a show after this, if you are listening live, with Keith AZ on Revolution Radio right after this. It's like Studio A or Studio B, you figure out which one. And that's going to be fun. But in the meantime, I was doing a little bit of searching. You know, sometimes you want to see what's being said about you. You know, it's a narcissism thing, and you know, I don't make any excuses for it. I love it. The Len Brown stand down protest, right? Let me just give you a background. New Zealand, little country. They have this city motif that is known around the world as the primate city motif. What that means is your biggest city is at least 2 times as big as your second biggest city. So that becomes kind of your center of commerce by default, right? It's usually because it's got a port or something like this. It's the same model around with countries and towns and villages throughout the United States, or some of them. And what's happened is, they go, okay, there's 1.4 million people living here, $42 billion worth of public assets. And the bankers go, you know, we want that. And considering we're on all three of the powerful roundtable groups, and we're talking about Australian banks here, like Australian Savings Bank, otherwise known as ASB, Westpac Bank, which the government actually does its banking with, ANZ, you know, just basically Australian-owned New Zealand front banks, more or less. And then the member of all these really powerful committees, like the Business Roundtable Group, the Institute for Infrastructural Development, along with a lot of big telecom companies and things of this nature, the big corporate players that you would expect to be in a secretive roundtable group making all their decisions, kind of like a mini Bilderberg group. You know, they just sit there and masturbate to the Bilderberg dreams of theirs, you know? And what's really quite rough, and this is where it comes down to Len Brown, is that previously Auckland had a mayor named John Banks, who was, you know, embroiled in a lot of really nice. I've encountered the person a number of times. Not a one of them has been pleasant. He's just so dry. It's just so old. And he's not even that old. I just feel like I'm talking to somebody who was educated in the 1880s or something like that. Just this backwards, disgusting presence. You know, like you're in the middle of a Paranormal Activity movie or something like that. Like there's this kind of demonic entity next to you, and you can sort of feel it, and your heart's pounding in your chest, and you're scared as hell. You say. And so everybody naturally elected him as mayor because that's exactly what most people want in a leader, isn't it? You know, just get out there, let's go for it. And interestingly enough, when they're incorporating all of these public assets, about $42 billion, into these new organizations that they're coming up, you know, in punctuated little question marks. And if you're listening from the United States, you know exactly what I'm talking about if you follow anything that goes on in your municipality, because this is Agenda 21 Protocol. Ayo! Oh, yeah! Oh,
You know what we're gonna do? You know what the end game is? To control absolutely everything, man. Corporately. Ain't no elected representatives, no nothing. We just take the money off the people, using the government as a front, and funnel all that money into the private corporations that really run everything. Okay? That clear enough for you, boy? This isn't, you know, some kind of, like, flippant accident that every single major municipality in the Western world has either started to do this, has it already gotten done, or is planning on it. You know, it's like, oh, wow, you know, I'm sure everybody just, it must have been 100th monkey syndrome. Everybody goes, yeah, well, I really want a corporate freaking dictatorship that I don't have any say in, bro. You know, all pay, no say. I don't know how I came up with the idea, but suddenly I woke up this morning and there it was, you know, all pay, no say. That's just the proper way. I mean, corporations know better to do with my money what I do, you know. It's so much better for me to not have a freaking choice about it, or where I live, or how much money I get paid anything, or what kind of BS kind of laws that I have to somehow structure my life and bend it into. No, sir. You know, that kind of thing. So naturally, John Banks loses the election and a guy called Len Brown becomes mayor. Everybody thinks he's like a champion of the people because he's like a mayor of South Auckland. It would be like, you know, I don't know, somebody from the Bronx winning the mayoral election or something like that, or somebody from Inglewood, you know, becoming mayor of Los Angeles. That kind of thing is like that vibe, like champion of the people. This is going to be great. And so naturally, he blows out the budget by $10 billion in like one or two terms. Cha-ching! You know, in a place that's only got like $40 billion worth of assets. So he mortgages 25% of the city in two terms, bro. On top of that, he gets embroiled in this sexual scandal with this very young, very attractive Asian woman. And nobody cares about that, not in the political sphere. Nobody cares about a sex scandal. It's actually all about the policy for them, because sex scandals are dirty. They're gross. They tell you with a wrong brush, and they say that you're being nasty. You know, you're making it perverse. Think about their family and all of that. It's like, well, bro, why wasn't he thinking of his family when he was shagging that bird? You know, it doesn't it come with the territory, so to speak? Oh God, I hate accidental puns. I really do. I'm just disappointed in myself. So anyway, after this shaggin' wagon rolls on and everybody gets over the scandal, this protest comes out led by a libertarian group of people from affordable Auckland. My name is Stephen Berry and Will Ryan, and they decide they're going to stage a protest. And Stephen and Will come to me and they go, you know, we need to have a protest. And I know my man Barry, who lives out in East Auckland, who has a great sound system and a van and everything with the little things you can screw the speakers on the roof of the roof of the van, lead the protest. We had big banners, the whole nine yards. So did some brainstorming, got it out there. And sure enough, there was a protest on, you know, 400 or 500 people allegedly, according to some sources, turned up. And you know what's really strange about it? Is although I really helped to kind of like put it on and led the protest march to a large degree and was like a MC extraordinaire, I felt like I kind of, I don't know, maybe damaged its credibility or something like that, or tarred the other guys with a brush, because this kind of encapsulating love of the establishment starts coming out in the media afterwards. Only the alternative media, I'm not sure if mainstream media even reported on the protests or whatever that was going down the central thing. But anyway, things of corruption came to be apparent in the ways that I've been explaining how they've been working, including money laundering that's being done in Sky City Casino in the middle of the city that are involving the mayor.
who got like 40 or something or some odd free hotel stays from them at a time when he was supporting their policy to enlarge their casino and get more pokey machine, more gambling machines, and so on and so forth. Just look. Let me just explain one very simple fact about New Zealand. The reason why it's on the second least perceived to be corrupt list by Transparency International is because we're the second best in the world at concealing how corrupt we are. Okay? Just let that sink in for a moment. This country is up to its eyeballs in scumbaggery, pure as the driven snow. And it is a very colder winter coming. And when people come out to protest one of the puppets that is helping this agenda be pushed forward, they get ragged on by left-leaning alternative media, but based upon like this kind of BS paradigmal shift that if you're against a so-called socialist, so-called left-wing politician, if they categorize it as being that simple and innocuous, that the only reason for the protest is because of an ideological opposition and not any real facts or any actual corruption or documents that have been released or investigations that have been ignored or people that have been cast out of their house and home because of this person's actions. No. It's just because he's a left-wing politician. You're just a right-winger. You have to be mean to him. You need to leave him alone. He hasn't done anything to you. You're like, well, yes, but he has done everything to the rest of the city, which has flow-on effects, which affects everything the way things run. And funneling the amount of money into disgusting corporate pockets. Right in the end of the pool table. All right. There's all your money, corner pocket. That's how it works. It's pretty straightforward. And somebody who facilitates such action at least deserves some attention for his scumbaggery, a protest or something of that nature. And I think one of the comments was, I've seen better attended chemtrail protests. You know who the only person who's like led chemtrail protests in this country is? It's me. You know? Well, I wouldn't say the only one. There's been plenty of other people who've helped to organize and done in their local area. Michelle Rhodes comes to mind. And quite a lot of people have actually shelled out money for a megaphone for me and a number of banners and things of that nature so that we can actually be well equipped when we go out there and we do these things. I think maybe 20 tops is how many we got for one of them. You kind of have to stand in awe of the power of a 100-watt wireless megaphone, though. So, you know, even though you've got 15 people and we're not even taking up the streets, it can be heard for quite a bit of a in every direction. But the kind of slanderous commentary that I see sort of frustrates me, you know, and it should be expected, right? Because everybody's got an opinion, and the problem with a lot of people is that their opinion is based on lies, misconceptions, arrogance, bias, brainwashing, mind control. Now, pick your poison. All of our brains are being poisoned by something. Some are being poisoned by fear. Some are being poisoned by false knowledge. Some are being poisoned by misinformation. Some by disinformation. To the point where it's almost predictable what kind of BS reactions are going to come out of people. Like, oh, I can see this coming. You know, it's like listening to a presidential candidate speak, and you know, let me guess. He's going to talk about jobs, he's going to talk about the economy, he's going to talk about how great freedom is and how we should support our troops and then vote for me. And he comes out and he says, we need to strengthen the economy, we need to get more jobs, and we need to support the troops, and we need more freedoms, vote for me. And everybody goes, yeah! And you're like, ugh. And you know, like, it's almost like you can't even do a singular face palm at those kind of frustrating moments when you need actually, you need a full two hands to just hold your face to make sure your eyeballs stay behind the eyelids and they don't explode out of your skull in a fountain of blood. With the rage inside and how easily people can be misled by some smooth-talking, predictably speaking, benign, narcissistic scumbag. Sweet mercy. Am I the only one who's kind of appealing to this kind of frustration? Appealing it back like the foreskin of a knob? Ah, it's just disgusting. And part of the burden of not ignoring reality is that you now have to deal with it. How do you deal with something so frustrating? How do you deal with a job this big? You need to expose the entire council, the entire roundtable groups that are controlling them, all the players as well as the political spectrum that dominates the equation. And you need to encapsulate that for somebody in 30 seconds or less, maybe even 7 seconds. That is impossible. Lies are real easy because they're simple, and you can just repeat them over and over again. The truth is unfortunately remarkably complex. It's based on facts. Facts have to be researched. You have to read it in the document and then publish it and then get it cross-referenced and so on and so forth. You got to have like 3 or more different sources to back up even one little theory that you think you got. And one thing that I wanted to do is I wanted to read out this. I'm sorry, I'm ranting. You know, in fact, that's one of my favorite lines of all time. I'm sorry, I'm ranting. Go ahead. The Len Brown stand down protest. You know, we have protest jars like, if it's brown, flush it down. Because like back in the day, I think when I was a kid, we all tried to save water. You know, there was a drought. It was in Auckland. It hadn't rained for like a week. And everywhere, oh, it's a drought, it's a drought. And you live in a freaking rainforest that somebody built in the middle of a swamp. You know, it's like you guys are just genius, aren't you? You got it sussed in the smallest connecting landmass in the whole freaking country called an isthmus. That's bound to work out just champion for the lot of us, isn't it? It's not going to be prohibitively expensive or spread out like even bigger than Los Angeles is, which it is. Unbelievable. It's so crazy, this city. Anyway, it's getting worse. And this guy named Matthew Denteith. I don't know if it's pronounced Denteith, like as in, you know, teeth that you chomp into somebody with. Or if it's like just pronouncing the word dentist with a lisp. Hello, I'm Matthew, and I'm a dentist. But anyway, I go to his website, right? No, I don't want to disparage Matthew necessarily. Well, I think it will by proxy. Anyway, this is the title thing of his MO. Conspiracy theories, and theories about conspiracy theorists. You know? So you can see that you're going to get the repetition of this kind of thing a lot. And there was another broadcast where I talked about the propensity for PhDs to repeat themselves quite a bit or to come up with a lot of unnecessary words in order to fill out a sentence and bore you to death. Because, and this isn't because they're boring people or anything like that, many PhDs get over this and become amazing speakers. And writers and whatnot. They're really thrilling to read. But some are in the 10,000-word thesis mode, whereas you've got an arbitrary target of the amount of words that you have to say something in. If you're a genius, you can say a lot in a few pages. A lot. And if you have an arbitrary target to fill, it means that you get used to, or rather in many ways get programmed into, a unnecessary filler. Just like, I can describe this in like 20 words or something like this, and average that I need per page is like a thousand or something. So I've got to somehow stretch 20 word understanding that I've got into a thousand words. How do I do that? You know, try not to use as many syllable words, bro, you know? And don't bother proofreading, maybe. But I wanted to read this to you. Just as kind of an illustration of what I'm talking about what it is to be a conspiracy theorist who talks about the truth, goes out, does activism, and kind of really practices what they preach. And the difference between how we go about it versus how people like Matthew Denteith go about it, you know, that kind of thing. So he says, I'm not much of an activist, mostly because my primary goal is the elimination of the human species, and thus far you don't seem to need my help in achieving that. Now, I believe that's kind of like sarcasm, but it's just kind of like a waving ridicule in your face, right? So I'll keep reading on. Occasionally I go on to protest marches, but by and large I tend to stay at home, sigh about human nature, and then talk about my feelings with a bottle of Scotland's finest spirits. And his Twitter profile is actually just a bunch of bottles of booze that none of them are full. All right, they've all been almost drank down to the thing. Like, he's only got like a tiny bit left in the bottle just to say he's got a little bit there saving on, but he drank the rest, you know. And I've always found alcoholism to not be the greatest intellectual stimulant. That just might be me. Maybe there's some case studies on it that alcohol doesn't make you the sharpest tool in the shed. Anyway. Which is all to say that if you met me at the Len Brown Stand Down March on Saturday the 22nd of February 2014, you might have been a bit worried. Worry not. I was there strictly as an observer, a dangerous task given that at least one of the organisers, Will Ryan, not only knows my face but has outed me to a hostile crowd before. It's kind of like a... dangerous of being exposed. Now, if you're just there as an observer, me, I become kind of like the ultimate obtrusive observer, okay? I'm right there at the front, very, very clearly visible. And if you don't like me, you've got to have some nerve to come up and say something to me, because I'm just there. And I'm not, you know, dominating anything. I'm not speaking over the speakers or trying to disrupt anything. So, you know, what's the thing about, right? But I don't know. Horses for courses, I guess, in terms of your approach to going to cover hostile events, you know? My interest in the Len Brown Stand Down March was its interesting array of speakers. At least three of the speakers, Vinnie Eastwood, Will Ryan, and Penny Bright, are variously associated with the 9/11 truth movement, the anti-fluoride brigade, and are skeptical about the safety of the MMR vaccine schedule. I wanted to see if they could keep to script and just talk about Len Brown, or whether they'd end up lurching off into the messy reaches of their own particular conspiracy theories. They mostly didn't, which was a surprise. But more about that in a minute. So I got this kind of... Remember how I just said about how you can see this coming? You know? It's not isolated to us seeing the lies coming. It also includes the liars seeing the truth coming, but thinking it's a lie. You understand? Because they've got the facts all twisted round. It's too much of some kind of brainwashing, you know? And brainwashing, very simple. I've explained it a number of times. Sleep deprivation, silo mentality, and appeal to authority, right? central authority figure, and that will basically make put you under mind control. How many people who are, you know, doing a lot of work at university get enough sleep? Very few, I'd say, because they got to work as well at the same time to get beer money, often working nights, some of them. So it shuts off that higher brain function. So you start to go into autopilot mode. You ever done that when you're real tired and you start driving home just after you've moved to a different place or something like that, and you start driving to your old house? You know, just that kind of autopilot kicks in. And it takes a while to correct it. And it's the same kind of thing with being educated, in my opinion. But, you know, what can I say? I only did like 2 years and then dropped out and then made 700 videos in the previous 2 years, whereas studying media at university, I'd made zero. So I wanted something that university wasn't able to give me. And if I was able to put $6,000 into equipment like cameras and computers and things of that nature instead of $6,000 for a education, might be in a radically different spot, wouldn't you say? Even if the equipment was bought with debt, which is what the student one is, but it's a debt that has no objective value associated with it. If you buy a computer and a camera to make videos on, you learn how to do it, right? And ultimately, that's what you're going to university to learn how to do, isn't it? You learn how to use this equipment. But once you come out and you've got several umpteen thousands of tens of thousands of dollars of debt in it and no equipment, what are you going to do? You know, you're screwed. You just screwed yourself out of a couple of years of real work. You screwed yourself out of the purchase of really fantastic gear that you could have made stuff with. That's the difference between having a street education, like as I've had as an activist, versus a institutional education, which Mr. Denteith has had. So it's just the two different approaches, and it's not a question of judgment. Now, some of my foreign readers will be asking, so who is this Len Brown person anyway? Len Brown is the current mayor of Auckland, who was re-elected last year on a substantial proportion of the vote. Now, popularity doesn't necessarily mean that the person's a real good dude and a real good bloke. It just means that people don't know that he's a real bad bloke. Okay? And if you've got a compliant media, it's not that big of a task, really. You know? The little scandals and whatnot. And also the fact that the other guy's a crook. I mean, what are you doing? A mayor re-elected who's like a kind of like, was elected initially kind of as a bit of a popular dude, right? And then the person he was running against previously in this next election turned out to be a bit of a crook and be going through like a whole bunch of legal stoushes and whatnot. So it killed his campaign, wouldn't it? And nobody else knew anybody else who was running. In fact, it was all left-wing candidates anyway. So what did you expect? It's like this completely unsurprising observation when you know the facts behind it. A week after he was re-elected, it turned out that the political advisor to his chief rival had been mud-racking and discovered that Brown had been having an affair, which was news to everyone, including his wife. The story then got very, very messy. The political opponent, John Polino, claimed he didn't know what his advisor, Luigi Wawiji, was there actually a dude called Luigi Wawiji? Because it was done in brackets, and I don't know whether or not he's being serious. Because if you're not being serious, you know, just for punctuation's sake, a misinterpretation, put in quotation marks to let you know that it's sarcasm, I guess. Anyway, despite the fact Polino had met with the person Brown had had an affair with shortly before the election, have you noticed how every kind of dick-referencing article, it's just hilarious, you know, because you just come up with so many things. I don't know. Len Brown, to me, it just reminds me of Soylent Green, you know, Soylent Brown. That's it. I can't get the word Soylent Brown out of my head. I've been thinking of the last couple of weeks, Soylent Brown, Soylent Brown. I'm thinking about Soylent Brown. He's the mayor of your city, bro. Being ruled by Soylent Brown. Questions were raised as to whether Brown had declared on the Register of Pecuniary Interests the hotel rooms he had used to conduct the affair in, and so forth. Certain members of the public thought the whole scandal was manufactured by the right to tarnish Auckland's left-wing mayor, whilst others said this spoke to character and that the mayor should resign. A report was commissioned which kind of said the mayor wasn't corrupt, but that some of his free hotel rooms or upgraded rooms were a conflict of interest, given he was deciding on laws and regulations which would have affected said hotel, and so forth. All in all, it was very, very messy, especially if you leave out about 90% of the other things that he's done, like the enormous increases in rates, the huge quantity of lies that he's told on record, the fact that he promised before his election that he would consult councillors about everything to do with the major plans of Auckland City, and then announced his big top 10 plan or whatever for the next 10 years. I forget, it was a big, you know, list of big projects and stuff that he wanted to do. And guess how many councillors he informed before he released that to the media? Zero! Zip. Nada. It was no Mucho De Niro. It wasn't even a Robert De Niro. Questions were raised about whether Brown had declared on the Register of Pecuniary Interest that the hotel rooms he had used to conduct the affair in, and so forth. Certain members of the public thought the whole scandal was manufactured by the right to tarnish Auckland's left-wing mayor. I just love rereading this stuff, man. I don't know. It's quite funny. You know, gloss over things and put your own taint on it. I get it. I enjoy it too. Whatever you might think about Len Brown and his fickle pickle, thanks to the critic for that particular term, it certainly has brought together a lot of people who are angry either at Len Brown the person or Len Brown the politician. A surprising number of the people on the march were holding up placards with messages about Len Brown's affair, whilst the speakers themselves kept repeating the refrain that I don't care about the mayor's affair. What I care about is, you know, opposition to the Len Brown and opposition to the Super City are fairly hard to disentangle, especially since the mayor often looks, and admittedly acts, like he is Super City personified. Now, here's the thing. When you actually listen, okay, I don't know, I'm very different to other people. When people tell me something that I strongly disagree with ideologically, intellectually, or factually, I get hot under the collar, as most people do. However, what I prefer to do then is to just keep hearing them out, because if there's actually something to it, they'll start linking things together and a pattern will start to emerge that they're not actually crazy. And sometimes you have to listen to a number of different sources about one particular subject before you start getting that idea in your head and your pattern recognition system that says that there actually is something here. It requires you to be open and honest with yourself and not judge other people before they speak, kind of thing. Just hear them out, and all the way to the end. And if it still don't make sense to you, you probably need to listen again, or investigate it to see if it's BS. You know, it's just some effort must be required in your intellectual or spiritual or whatever kind of evolution you need to undertake for it to be worth it. You have to sacrifice something. You have to give something in order to receive back. It's kind of the principle of the universe, and knowledge cannot be gleaned from ignoring those who possess it. Again, just my opinion. I could be wrong. Many of the things people are worried about and protested about are not issues to do with Len Brown's style of politics, but issues to do with the botched implementation, the Super City, i.e., if we're going to blame anyone, surely we should be blaming Rodney Hyde, who rushed the legislation through. Rodney Hyde, who at the time was the head of the ACT Party, which incidentally John Banks, the former mayor of Auckland who lost to Len Brown, became the head of the ACT Party right afterwards. Okay? and then we're going to blame these people. See, it's all part of the same fucking club. Incidentally, they all happen to be Freemasons. You know, coincidentally, you know, it's like we think Len Brown, John Banks definitely, and John Key allegedly are pretty high-level Freemasons in New Zealand. And it's pretty straightforward. If you look at the pins, if you investigate for more than 2 minutes, or at least listen to somebody who knows what the hell they're talking about and has actually had their head buried in these documents like Penny Bright has for 10 years, you know? You look up to these people as if they're crazy conspiracy theorists, but the thing that makes them appear crazy is that they know something, and they know it very well, that appears to you as crazy talk because you've been told and believe to the contrary the whole time, and you're not prepared to brave the disillusionment that's necessary to corrupt your mind, or rather de-corrupt your mind in that fashion. Many of the things people are worried about and protested about are not issues to do with Len Brown's style of politics. The Brown-esque design, you know. National and Act wanted rates in Auckland to be unified and not set by area and area, and that means some areas of Auckland have seen rates increase by fiat rather than dastardly Brown-esque design. Even though Brown promised everybody that the rates would not increase beyond the rate of inflation. What he didn't tell the public is that it's legal and normal common practice for the council to make up their own rate of inflation. In some places, you've got people doubling the amount of rates that they pay. You're having people who are retired who are being forced to leave beach communities like Raglan, who's just down the line here, as a result of similar effects, right? Regionalization, raise the tax out of everybody, get all these people the hell out of their homes, and let the land go back to nature if it can. Just cluster everybody into the cities and egg crates, you know? That'll be nice. That'll be brilliant. That'll be Soylent Brown, won't it? The march. I arrived at the bottom of Queen Street at 10 to 12 and found about 50, maybe more, people milling around Will Ryan. I love the word milling, you know. It just kind of characterizes the whole thing as if for some reason, not liking corruption, broad-scale theft and corporate takeover of billions of dollars of public assets was zero accountability. You know, we're just sheep, mate, you know.
We want actual rights and freedoms and not be parasited upon by some cancerous worm.
And this is where it gets interesting in the article. You know? Given that Will Ryan knows my face, I ducked into the mall and looked at stationery. Oh, you know. He's like, he thinks he's a secret agent, you know. But you actually do have to be like that if you don't want to be spotted by Will. He got eagle eye vision, man. He's like the bionic libertarian. He spots you out of a crowd, you know. Oh my god. It was at that point that public addresses Russell Brown asked for pics of the crowd, and public addresses Russell Brown is a radio show, I believe. And I remember one time we were doing there some cannabis activism, and I passed him a joint at a big political television thing that was being thing, and he smoked it, yeah, and he passed it on, yeah, but I got kicked out. With my camera. It's great getting footage of people kicking you out of places on a camera. It's like, yeah, I can relive that without actually getting shoved again. Okay. And again, and then things got a bit weirder. Given that I am a diligent servant of the people, in brackets, even if I do seek the destruction of the people as a whole. Yeah, I'm convinced that he's joking now, but the problem is many a truth is said in jest. And it's kind of insulting, you know, because what he's doing is he's gripping everybody who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence actually use their power to maintain or grow that influence, believe that anybody who thinks that they're crazy is in fact directly involved with and agrees with the overall depopulation global agenda. Okay? No. For the most part, people who criticize people like us are people that just don't believe it. And there's a splinter there where it goes, not only do I not believe it because I think it's fantastical, but I'm going to refuse to believe it. That's the interesting part right there. Not that you don't believe it because it sounds like crazy, but because you refuse to believe it because you think it sounds crazy. Yeah, that's one of the interesting things. I'm not sure what you can do to change a mind like that. Maybe, you know, it all just comes down to trauma, really. If you haven't had cops make up lies about you in order to get you arrested in handcuffs and chuck you in the cell for a couple of hours, maybe even 48 hours, and hogtied naked without food or water over the weekend for something they made up, you're likely to be able to, you know, sort of tolerate things that happen in society without kind of raising an eyebrow and just go, this hasn't happened to me. You know, it comes down to the amount of trauma you have, and it's almost directly linked to the amount of empathy you can feel. Unless, of course, you have so much of it that you turn into one of the psychopathic abusers yourself, which I think every traumatized person has the potential to. You ever notice that? People who've gone through a lot sometimes become sort of crazy, maybe predatory. Happens a lot in the truth movement, man. Really. Not passing any judgment or naming any names. Given that I'm a diligent servant of the people, what does Matthew Denteith know about being a diligent servant of the people? You wrote a thesis about conspiracy theories and basically wash over the whole thing and say it makes us feel comfortable that we know that there's a particular group of scumbags that are running it all. That doesn't make any fucking body feel comfortable, bro. I mean, what planet are you living on? These all-powerful scumbags who could just fuck your life up just like that? And we make that conclusion up because it makes us feel happy that someone's in control? That's preposterous. Oh, my God. Goes on to say, I braved the crowd once more, only to find that in the 5 minutes I'd been gone, the number of people in attendance had tripled, maybe quadrupled. He seemed very surprised by this, that, you know, surprised people are turning up against corruption. You know, actually, it would be surprising to see a large people standing up against corruption. I scarcely believe it could happen. The mix of protesters was mostly skewed towards white people in their 40s or 50s, which are incidentally the kind of people who'd been born as the baby boomer generation, worked in a time where houses cost you like maybe 18 or 60 grand or something that you could pay off in just a couple of years. So they're the only people who actually own houses in the freaking city anymore. Anybody who's come here after the 60s and 70s, chances of you getting a home of your own, pretty freaking slim, Jim. So, you know, it's like, it's a racial thing, okay? Now, isn't it interesting how racists accuse other people of being racist? Pretty straightforward, isn't it? They look at everything in terms of race. So as soon as they see a group of white people together coming out and are protesting somebody who happens to be another white guy, Len Brown is, they go, just mention it like just on the slide, sort of like plant that seed with you, you know? With a scattering of people who were slightly younger or older. A collection bucket was going around, as Vinnie Eastwood ominously and deceptively suggested through his megaphone, free speech isn't free, and that was actually said after the protest, when we also illuminated the crowd to the fact that just having a permit for your free speech to protest down the street is $500. $500, that's what the council charged us. And so I can raise money pretty well when I need to, especially if it's for a worthy cause. And raising money for free speech, I can think of no greater cause than the cause of irony. So I said that I very greatly appreciate all of you for coming out today and exposing the corruption of Len Brown and letting your voices be heard. But unfortunately, more of you is required, because free speech is not free, because this protest cost the organizers $500 to put on, not to mention all the other costs associated with, not to mention how much time they put into it. And if you would be willing to help us at least pay for the protest, go and see the people with the buckets out there. Okay, that's what I said. And this gets translated to it somehow being before the protest began. That I'm ominously and deceptively suggesting that free speech isn't free. How is it deceptive when I've got the document in my hand? I've actually got the bill. I'm holding the bill. This is how much free speech fucking cost us. And I ain't even wanted to, given the organizers, and also love the lack of grammar. What is it about people who are grammar Nazis? You know, I'm not generally a grammar Nazi, but if somebody's dissing me, suddenly I've become one. Have you ever noticed that? Have a see, everybody. What he meant to say is, and I neither wanted to give the organizers money nor wanted to explain why I didn't want to give them money. And he says given instead of give. Just a little editing technique for you, Matthew, if you're listening. Anyway, what I really desired was some video footage. So I crossed the road, pulled my camera out, and began to record. Yep, and it did record. There was like a two-minute video of just the protest, you know, pulling out. And some dude in the – it's quite funny. Big banner that says, Len Brown, stand down. And this one dude like jumps right into the frame right as you can just about to see the banner, and then kind of like blocks it out a bit so you can't really see it. And Matthew doesn't move or anything like that to try and get a better shot. He just sits there standing, holding it still and freeze like for two minutes like a statuette. It's quite but again, he's probably just afraid of being filmed. It's like he's going covert. Now, isn't it interesting? Now, somebody who denies that there's any form of conspiracy that exists, I'm of course blowing that way out of proportion, and in doing so inaccurately, just for a hyperbolic sense of comedy. Matthew, don't take it personally. Acts in a conspiratorial way to conceal their efforts, so they can write this garbage afterwards. No offense, but you'd be crazy if you could see the irony here. It took a while for the protesters to get into the festive mood. Chanting for the elderly middle classes isn't obvious, not a natural skill. Is obviously not a natural skill, I think, is what he meant to say. It's just littered with these little gems. Man, we're coming almost to the end of the broadcast, and I'm just ranting to go through the end of it. One of the things that really... frustrated me about this piece. I think it was actually the characterization of Russell Malcolm and Penny Bright, actually. So I just want to do that, because he came out with these descriptions for everybody at the protest. This is Penny Bright. I find Penny Bright confusing, mostly because people call her left wing. She's not really any wing, but rather a political centrist who supports a whole lot of disparate causes. Her protest against the mayor was couched entirely in terms of potential corruption by the mayor with respect to the Sky City Convention Center deal. And if you knew anything about Penny, it wasn't just that, because you could talk to Penny for a decade and still be learning stuff after it. I have been, trust me, I know. You would be amazed at the stuff that Penny Bright knows. Pennybrightformayor.org.nz if you want to vote for her in this upcoming election, because god damn it, we need a candidate that actually knows and isn't blinded
by the scumbaggery. She could see it. I have never seen a woman with this much tenacity. All right? I haven't seen tenacity in any kind of like female organism other than a Kodiak bear protecting its cubs. That's how she goes after corruption. With her claws and her teeth, with her... Mate, something to behold. A lot of respect for Penny. A lot of it. And the other one was about Russell Malcolm. Russell Malcolm is one of Vinnie Eastwood's pet projects. And pet projects? That is like... That really incensed me, man. You know what Russell did? He wrote a 52-page dossier about the things that the council had done to him, including getting arrested on no charge and having his bail conditions being dictated over the phone by the Prime Minister himself in the middle of the night, exposing a grand scheme of corruption and bribes that was going on at the same time that this super city was being set up. And he was hushed. He had his business closed down. He was arrested at his own dinner party in his own house in front of his guests. Held without charge. You know, that kind of thing. Had his internet cut off. Had people surveilling him up to wazoo. And then after the election happened and people elected John Key, it was all over Rover. And he'd done this 10 years previously where he got the entire Rodney District Council fired, including the mayor. Because he exposed a big seat of corruption. They were afraid that it would happen again. They were afraid that it would make the super city look bad. They were afraid that it might affect the outcome of the election. So they screwed him. He was so traumatized. He used to be a ballroom dancer and he can't dance anymore. He used to run a business, a really successful one, going head to head with the real estate companies. And he can't even open mail anymore because he's so traumatized from all the letters and all this crap that these people are sending at him. And he wrote a 52-page dossier, and I felt the moral obligation to get him to sit down in front of a camera with a microphone and record it. And then I spent 3 nights consecutively staying up all fucking night editing all of that. Total of like 6 or 7 hours footage down into like 3 hours and 20, cutting out all the possible little pauses, the ums, the ahs, and the mistakes and everything. He was just a machine, just reading it out and then taking a little kind of like second to recover and everything. And it's just, I did that not as somebody, you know, pet project. I did that because I saw a really good man in pain. And I considered myself a good man, and I have been in pain. And I couldn't consider myself a good man anymore if I saw him go through that and did nothing to help him, when I know that I was the only person in the fucking country who would do that for him. That's not a pet project. That's called a way of life, Mr. Denteith. And I do take it very seriously. And there's a reason why I help people. It's because nobody else will a lot of the time. You've been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for doing so at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Please remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast. So if you'd like to have a laugh and get angry at real pathetic scumbags, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and start up a regular gifting today of a couple of dollars a month just to keep all the bills paid. And also support American Freedom Radio on the homepage, AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll see you again sometime.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
What kind of person are you?
How do you see yourself? Are you the kind of person that lets everyone else do all the work, just hoping that you'll be able to get some of the crumbs that fall from the table? Or are you the kind of person that rolls up their sleeves and does the dirty jobs that no one else wants to do? Are you hoping that all the activists giving their blood, sweat, and tears to serve humanity are going to solve all the world's problems? Or are you just wondering, is there something simple I can do to contribute? Yes. Yes, there is. Help us. Help us do what we do. Partner up with American Freedom Radio today by gifting a regular amount to support the network and your favorite hosts, bringing you less commercials and more information. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and start donating today from between $1 and $100 per month, according to the kind of person you are. Thank you very much for your support.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape of various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No pay is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyte removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyte is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyte LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey water banner.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.